A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's son Ezra is down with a viral infection, and Daniel noticed the kind of thing that makes any parent's stomach drop, labored breathing in a baby who can't tell you what's wrong. He did what a lot of us do now. He asked ChatGPT, then he reached for his pulse oximeter. The number came back reassuring, around 96%. But the breathing didn't settle, and he and Hannah could hear crackling. The respiratory rate was up around 60 to 70 breaths a minute. No flared nostrils, no discoloration, but they went to urgent care anyway. The doctor found the virus had settled into Ezra's lungs and prescribed a Ventolin nebulizer. So Daniel's asking us to walk through the protocol for when labored breathing in a baby actually warrants that trip. What makes a home oximeter worth trusting? How to reliably count breaths per minute, whether any devices do it automatically, and if not, what the best crude method is. He used a phone app where he tapped a button in sync with Ezra's breaths, which turns out to be a lot closer to the clinical standard than he probably realized.
It is, and I want to get to that because it's a nice payoff. But first, the number Daniel got, 96%, and the decision he made anyway. That's the whole episode in miniature. The oximeter said reassuring, the clinical picture said otherwise, and he trusted the clinical picture. That was the right call, and the evidence for why is actually kind of damning for the device he was holding.
Damning how? 96 is a good number. I'd have felt better seeing it.
You'd have felt better, and in one narrow sense, you'd have been right to. But here's the thing about consumer pulse oximeters. They're very good at ruling out hypoxemia and quite bad at confirming it. A big validation study from a few years back took the 10 top-selling oximeters on Amazon, the ones everyone actually owns, 20 to 50 euros each, and tested them against arterial blood gas in ICU patients. Not a single one met the accuracy standard the FDA requires for clearance. The mean bias ran anywhere from about negative 0.6 to negative 4.8, so they read low, sometimes by a lot.
Low. So a reassuring number might be even more reassuring than it looks.
Right. The negative predictive value was 98 to 99%. If it says you're fine, you're probably fine. But the positive predictive value was 11 to 30%. If it says you're low, it's a coin flip at best, probably worse. So Daniel's 96 was probably accurate, or even a little lower than his true saturation. That's the number working as intended. What it didn't do, and what no home oximeter can do, is tell him whether Ezra's work of breathing was the problem. Because saturation can be normal while a kid is working extremely hard to keep it there.
That's a distinction I don't think most parents make. The number is an output. The work of breathing is the input. A baby can compensate for a while, breathe faster, recruit accessory muscles, grunt a little, and hold their oxygen up. Then they tire out, and the number drops off a cliff.
And that's exactly the trajectory you don't want to catch at the bottom. Which is why every pediatric triage protocol I've ever seen puts respiratory rate, retractions, grunting, and mental status ahead of a spot oxygen check. The oximeter is a snapshot. The work of breathing is a movie.
So walk me through the protocol. Daniel's asking what the actual decision tree looks like. When do you stay home? When do you go to urgent care? When do you skip urgent care and go straight to an emergency room?
The red flags that mean emergency, not urgent care, are the ones Daniel said he didn't see. Blue or gray lips, face, or fingernails, grunting with every breath, head bobbing. Severe chest retractions, the skin sucking in between the ribs, above the collarbone, under the rib cage. A child who can't speak in sentences, or for a baby, can't feed because they're too busy breathing. And drowsiness or confusion. Any of those, you don't stop to debate, you go.
And the stuff Daniel did see?
Rapid breathing for age, labored breathing, crackling sounds, fussiness. That's the urgent care tier. It's not that you can ignore it, Daniel didn't, and the diagnosis justified the trip, but it's not a lights and sirens situation. A respiratory rate of 60 to 70 in a baby Ezra's age is at or above the top of the normal range. The Cleveland Clinic puts normal for an infant under 3 months at 30 to 60 breaths a minute. For 6 to 12 months, it's 25 to 40. The World Health Organization's threshold for fast breathing, the one they use in low-resource settings to trigger pneumonia treatment, is 50 breaths a minute for a baby between 2 and 12 months. Daniel counted 60 to 70. That's fast by any standard.
So the rate alone was enough to justify the trip, even before the crackling.
The rate alone, yes. The crackling is what told you it was lower respiratory. A viral infection in the lungs, bronchiolitis, viral pneumonia, the spectrum. You hear crackles or wheeze on auscultation. That's not something a parent can diagnose at home, and it's not something an oximeter will catch. The oximeter reads oxygen saturation. It says nothing about where the virus is or what it's doing to the small airways.
One thing I want to flag for parents, because Daniel mentioned he has asthma, and that's why he was keyed into this. Viral infections flare up reactive airways. That's true for asthmatics, but it's also true for babies with small airways even without an asthma diagnosis. A virus that would give you or me a runny nose can give a one-year-old bronchiolitis just because their airways are tiny. The diameter matters. A little inflammation that would be trivial in an adult airway can be a big deal in a baby's.
That's the physics of it. Airway resistance goes up dramatically as the radius shrinks. It's an inverse fourth power relationship. So a little swelling in a small airway is a big obstruction. And that's why the Ventolin nebulizer helped. It's a bronchodilator. It opens up the smooth muscle around the airways. For a viral infection in the lungs, it doesn't treat the virus, but it buys the baby breathing room while the immune system does its job.
And the timing matters too. RSV and similar viruses have a pretty predictable arc. Days 1 and 2 are runny nose, mild cough, low fever, fussiness. Days 3 to 5 are the peak. That's when the cough worsens, the wheeze shows up, the fever spikes, and complications develop. So, if Ezra's on day 3 or 4 of this thing, the labored breathing is right on schedule, which is useful to know, but also means the next 48 hours are the window to watch.
That's the part I'd want parents to internalize. The breathing might get worse before it gets better. If you've seen a doctor on day 2 and they said it's viral, that doesn't mean you're done. The virus is still climbing. You go home with the nebulizer and you keep watching.
Let's talk about the oximeter itself. Because Daniel called it the one-at-home device he finds virtually indispensable, and I want to know if that's actually true.
I'd say it's indispensable in the same way a smoke detector is indispensable. You want it in the house, you want it to work, but you don't want to sit there staring at it while the kitchen is on fire. The oximeter is a screening tool, not a diagnostic tool, and the regulatory reality is messier than most people assume. Most of the fingertip oximeters sold at drugstores and online aren't FDA cleared. Masimo and Nonin both make over-the-counter fingertip oximeters that are cleared. Everything else is, in the FDA's eyes, a wellness device. The accuracy standard for clearance. The ISO standard requires the root mean squared difference from arterial blood gas to be under 3%. None of the 10 top-selling Amazon oximeters met that in the study I mentioned.
So what should a parent actually buy?
If you want the regulatory stamp, you buy the Masimo MightySat or the Non-N True O2. They cost more, think three figures, instead of $25, but they're cleared devices. If you're going to use the $25 one, and most people will, use it the way Daniel used it, as one data point, not the decision maker. Get a good reading, warm hand, still finger, nail polish off, and check that the pulse rate on the display matches what you can feel. If the pulse rate is wrong, the saturation reading is garbage.
That's a nice practical check. The oximeter is lying about the pulse. It's lying about the oxygen.
And the other things that degrade accuracy. Cold hands, poor perfusion, motion, dark skin pigmentation. That last one is a real health equity problem. Oximeters have historically been calibrated on lighter skin tones, and they overestimate oxygen in people with darker skin. The FDA put out a notice about this. Nonin specifically markets their over-the-counter device as accurate across all skin colors. So if you're in a family where that matters, it's worth knowing which device is actually tested for it.
And for a weakling baby, which is Daniel's actual situation, the fingertip oximeter is, Ezra's one. His fingers are tiny. Where do you even put the thing?
You can use a toe. That's what most parents do with infants. The big toe, if you can get it still long enough. But here's the honest part. A struggling, fussy baby is exactly the worst case for a consumer oximeter. Motion artifact is the number one cause of bad readings. If the baby is squirming, the waveform on the display is all over the place, and the number it spits out isn't worth much. Daniel said he eventually got a reading, and 96 is plausibly real, but it took effort, and the effort itself is a signal. If getting a reading is that hard, the baby isn't in a state where a spot check is going to be reliable.
What about the baby monitors that claim to do continuous oxygen monitoring? The owlet and the rest.
That's a whole other can of worms. The short version is that the American Academy of Pediatrics doesn't recommend home cardiorespiratory monitors for healthy babies, and the evidence for the consumer versions is thin. A study in JAMA tested two of the smartphone integrated pulse oximetry baby monitors against a hospital-grade device in 30 hospitalized infants. One of them, the Owlet SmartSock 2, had a hypoxemia sensitivity of about 89%. Not terrible, not great. The other one, the Baby Vita, had a sensitivity of 0%. It never detected hypoxemia, and it displayed falsely low pulse rates. So you had a device that was actively misleading parents.
0%. That's not a monitor. That's a plush toy with a battery.
And the FDA put out a notice last September warning consumers about unauthorized infant monitors for measuring and monitoring. The market has moved. Owlet's newer DreamSock and the Masimo Stork are FDA cleared, but the category as a whole is still full of devices making claims they can't back up. The takeaway for a parent like Daniel is that a baby monitor isn't a substitute for looking at the baby. The baby is the monitor. The device is a supplement at best.
Let's get to the breathing rate, because that's the part of Daniel's prompt I found myself most interested in. He counted 60 to 70 breaths a minute. How do you actually do that reliably, and is there a device that does it for you?
The gold standard is a manual 60-second count with a timer. You watch the chest rise, you count each rise for a full minute. That's the reference everything else gets compared to. The problem is that a full minute of focused counting with a sick, wiggling baby is hard. The R-Rate developers put it bluntly. Manual counting is time-consuming and requires full attention, and if any disruption happens, you have to restart the minute. That's the reality.
And if you do a shorter count and multiply?
The old World Health Organization guidance from the 90s found that a 60-second count is more accurate than a 30-second count, though the difference wasn't clinically significant. If you're going to do 30 seconds and double it, you're probably in the right ballpark, but you're adding error. And here's the deeper problem. A baby's respiratory rate is inherently variable. A study in neonates found median within baby variability of 11.5 to 28%. So a single count, even a perfect 60-second count, is a snapshot of a moving target. That's why the trend matters more than any one number.
Which brings me to the app Daniel used. He tapped a button in sync with breaths. That's not a crude hack. That's a validated clinical tool, and I want to know which one he stumbled onto.
The one that matches his description exactly is R-Rate, from the University of British Columbia and BC Children's Hospital. It's free, it's on iOS and Android, and the way it works is exactly what Daniel did. You tap the screen on each inhalation, and the app computes the respiratory rate from the median interval between breaths. It does it in under 10 to 15 seconds. A big validation study in Uganda. Over 3,500 children under 5 found it had a correlation of 0.95 with a reference count, and nearly 99% of measurements took under 15 seconds.
So Daniel's phone app was more rigorously validated than his pulse oximeter.
That's the punchline, and it's true. The TAP app is a real clinical instrument. The oximeter is a wellness gadget. But I should add the caveat. In a head-to-head study against a 60-second reference count, R-rate correlated at 0.62, and the limits of agreement were wide, minus 24 to plus 23 breaths a minute. So it's good, but it can be off. And about 12.6% of the time, it flicked a child's classification between fast and normal breathing on sequential measurements. So it's a screening tool, too. A better one than people assume, but not a substitute for clinical judgment.
There's another app, the Owlrite Counter from Seattle Children's, that does something clever. It counts taps over 30 seconds, and if the two 15-second halves differ by more than 4 breaths a minute, it extends to a full 60 seconds. Then it classifies fast versus normal based on the WHO thresholds. That study found a correlation of 0.83 with a reference count, and it correctly classified fast breathing 86% of the time.
Which is better than our rate in that particular head-to-head. Both are free, both are legitimate. The difference is that All Right was designed for the clinical setting and builds in the variability check. Our rate optimizes for speed. For a parent at home, either one is a huge step up from eyeballing it.
What about fully automatic devices? Something that just watches the baby and tells you the rate without any tapping?
They exist in the clinical world. Masimo's Rad-G pulse oximeter estimates respiratory rate from the plethysmogram, the waveform from the pulse itself. Acoustic monitors like Masimo's Rainbow RR use a sensor on the neck to listen to breaths. A study in pediatric post-surgical patients found the acoustic method had a bias of negative 0.3 breaths a minute against capnography, which is excellent. But here's the catch. The automated point-of-care methods had wide limits of agreement in children under 5. The Rad-G's automated respiratory rate was off by as much as minus 34 to plus 6 breaths a minute compared to manual counting. That's not a device you want making decisions for a 1-year-old.
And at the consumer level?
There are smartphone apps that claim to measure respiratory rate, oxygen saturation, and temperature from the phone camera. Little Angel Medical's Vitals Check is one. It advertises AI-based measurement for kids 12 months and up. But it's a wellness claim, not an FDA-cleared medical measurement. The camera-based phone oximetry apps had poor reliability in the one pediatric study I know of. The probe-based ones, where you plug an actual sensor into the phone, did better, but they're not what most parents are downloading.
So the honest answer to Daniel's question about devices is, yes, they exist, but the automatic ones are either clinical hardware he doesn't own or consumer apps he shouldn't trust for medical decisions. The tap app he already used is the sweet spot.
And the fallback, if you have no app and no device, is the manual 60-second count. Watch the chest, count the rises, use a timer. If the baby is too wiggly for a full minute, do 30 seconds and double it, but know you're adding error. The key is to count when the baby is calm or asleep if you can. A crying baby breathes faster. A sleeping baby gives you the truest baseline.
That's a practical tip I hadn't thought of. Count during sleep if you want a real baseline. The fussy awake number is inflated by the fussing itself.
And that's part of why Daniel's 60 to 70 might have been a little high. Ezra was fussy. Fussing raises the rate. But even accounting for that, he was above the WHO threshold, and the crackling confirmed the lower respiratory involvement. The number did its job.
Let me ask the question. I think a lot of parents are actually asking when they're in this situation. How do you know if you're overreacting? Because the line between attentive and anxious is hard to find at 2 in the morning with a sick baby.
The honest answer is that the system is designed for overreaction. Urgent care exists for exactly this. The cost of going in and being told it's viral and you watch and wait. That's a financial and time cost, but it's not a medical harm. The cost of staying home when it's actually lower respiratory and deteriorating. That's a real harm, so the asymmetry points toward going in.
But there's a flip side. If you go in for every sniffle, you're teaching yourself that the oximeter and the urgent care are the only things standing between your baby and disaster. That's not a good mental model either.
No, and that's where the red flags list earns its keep. If you can name the specific things that mean emergency, the retractions, the grunting, the color change, the lethargy, then you have a checklist. If none of those are present, you have time. You can watch, count the breaths, check the oximeter, and reassess in an hour. If the work of breathing is getting worse, you go. If it's stable, you keep watching. The checklist is what lets you sleep.
I want to make sure we hit the reminder Daniel asked us to include. Nothing we've said is medical advice. This is two brothers talking through the evidence. If your baby is struggling to breathe and you're worried, call your pediatrician or go to urgent care. The protocol we're describing is for understanding the decision, not making it for you.
I'll add the thing I used to tell parents in clinic. You aren't bothering us. The parent who brings in a baby with labored breathing and a viral infection is doing exactly the right thing. The ones I worried about were the ones who waited until the baby was gray. Daniel and Hannah went in early, got a diagnosis, got a prescription, and now they know what they're dealing with. That's the system working.
The crackling detail sticks with me. That's not something a parent is supposed to interpret. That's a stethoscope finding. But Daniel heard it, and it tipped him. I think there's something to be said for the parent who knows their kid's baseline well enough to notice when the sounds change.
That's the thing no device replaces. The oximeter can't hear crackles. The app can't see retractions. The parent is the integrator. You're the one putting together the rate, the sound, the look, the behavior. The devices are inputs. The decision is yours.
Let's talk about what to look for in a reliable home oximeter, because Daniel asked that directly, and I don't want to leave it hanging. What's the actual buying advice?
If you want the clear device, Masimo MightySat or Non-N TruO2. Both are FDA-cleared over-the-counter fingertip oximeters. They cost more, but they're the only ones with the regulatory stamp. If you're going to buy a cheaper one, and most people will, look for one that displays a plethysmograph waveform, the little wiggly line that shows the pulse. If the waveform is clean and regular, the reading is probably good. If it's jagged and all over the place, the number is noise. And always check that the displayed pulse rate matches what you can feel at the wrist or the chest.
The pulse rate cross-check is the single most useful piece of advice in this whole episode. It's free. It takes 5 seconds, and it tells you whether to trust the number.
It works for adults, too. If your oximeter says your pulse is 110 and you can feel it 60, the oxygen number is fiction. Throw it out and take another reading.
What about the skin pigmentation issue? You mentioned it earlier. How should a parent think about that when buying?
It's a real problem, and it's under discussed. Oximeters work by shining light through the skin and measuring how much is absorbed by oxygenated versus deoxygenated hemoglobin. Melanin absorbs light too, and if the device wasn't calibrated on darker skin, it can overestimate oxygen saturation. The FDA has acknowledged this. Non-N specifically markets their over-the-counter device as tested across all skin tones. If that's relevant to your family, it's worth paying for the device that actually did the testing.
For a baby, the practical advice is toe, not finger, and wait for stillness. If the baby is squirming, the reading is worthless.
Which loops back to Daniel's experience. He got a reading eventually after a struggle. The struggle itself is information. A baby who can't hold still long enough for a 30-second oximeter reading is a baby who isn't giving you a clean measurement. The number might be right, but you can't hang a medical decision on it.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about the oximeter being a smoke detector. I think that's the right frame, and I want to push it further. A smoke detector doesn't tell you where the fire is or how big it is. It tells you there's smoke. The oximeter tells you there's hypoxemia or there isn't. It doesn't tell you why, and it doesn't tell you what's coming. Daniel's 96 was the smoke detector saying the air is clear. But the crackling was the smell of smoke. The respiratory rate was the heat. The oximeter was the least informative signal in the room.
That's the misconception I want to nail down before we wrap. The single most common wrong belief about this topic is that a normal oxygen reading means the baby is fine. It doesn't. It means the baby is currently oxygenating. A baby can be working extremely hard to maintain that number, and the work itself is the problem. The number is the last thing to drop. By the time it drops, you're already behind.
The protocol in one pass, know the red flags that mean emergency, count the breaths, preferably with a tap app, and know the age-based thresholds. Listen for sounds that don't belong. Watch the work of breathing. Use the oximeter as a cross-check, not a verdict. And if the picture is worsening, go in. The system is built for you to use it.
The RSV timing. Days 3 to 5 are the peak. If you're on day 2 and it's mild, don't assume you're through it. The virus is still climbing. That's the window to be most vigilant.
Daniel, if you're listening, you did the thing right. You used the tools, you trusted the clinical picture over the number, and you got Ezra the prescription he needed. The nebulizer will help. The next few days are the watch window. Keep counting.
I count breaths differently. I used to work a summer job at a sleep lab in Hartford. This was the early 2000s. My job was to sit in a dark room and watch the respiratory traces on a monitor for 8 hours. The machine counted breaths automatically. It was wrong about a third of the time. The chest strap would slip, or the patient would roll over, and the trace would go flat. So I'd sit there with a clipboard and count manually, 60 seconds at a time, all night. You learn to see a breath in the rise of a shoulder. You don't even need the chest. The shoulder tells you. The reason I bring it up is that everyone in this conversation is treating the oximeter like it's the device that matters. It's none. The device that matters is the one that counts breaths. The oximeter tells you what's happening now. The respiratory rate tells you what's about to happen. A baby can hold their oxygen up for a long time by breathing faster. The rate is the early warning. The oximeter is the late confirmation. I had a cousin whose kid had bronchiolitis. She called me at midnight, panicking, because the oximeter said 94. I asked her how fast the kid was breathing. She didn't know. She'd been staring at the oximeter for an hour. I told her to count. She called back 5 minutes later and said 65. I said, go in. The oximeter said 94. The rate said 65. The tap app Daniel used is fine. It's basically what I did with the clipboard, minus the dark room and the coffee. But the thing the app can't do is tell you whether the breaths are getting shallower. A baby can breathe fast and shallow, and that's worse than fast and deep. The rate alone doesn't catch that. You have to watch the chest. Is it moving a lot, or is it just fluttering? That's the thing the machine can't see. I still have the clipboard. It's in a box somewhere. I don't know why I kept it. The clip was broken.
The shallower point is one I hadn't considered. Fast and shallow versus fast and deep. That's a distinction a parent can see, but a device can't.
It maps onto the clinical concept of tidal volume. A baby can maintain minute ventilation by breathing fast and shallow, but it's inefficient. The dead space stays the same, so a bigger fraction of each breath is wasted. The work goes up. The actual gas exchange doesn't. That's the beginning of fatigue.
The sleep lab closed in 2008. The building's a parking garage now. I drove past it last year and counted the floors. 4. They kept the same.
What I take from Hilbert's story is that the tools keep changing, but the skill is the same. Watching, counting, noticing when the pattern shifts. The oximeter is a nice addition, but the parent who can count breaths and watch the chest is doing the thing that's always worked.
The thing that will keep working when the battery dies at 2 a.m.
The misconception. One more time. A normal oxygen reading means the baby is fine. It doesn't. It means the baby is compensating. The work of breathing is the signal. The number is the echo.
The work of breathing is something you can see, hear, and count. You don't need a device for it. You need attention, a timer, and the willingness to trust what you're seeing over what the screen says.
That's the episode. Watch the chest, count the breaths, know the red flags, and go in when the picture worsens. The oximeter is a tool, not a verdict.
Thanks to Hilbert Flumentop for producing, and for the Sleep Lab story. This has been My Weird Prompts, the Human AI Collaboration Podcast.
If this helped you, tell another parent. Email us at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.